the Copa del Rey, the Copa Italia continuing. And of course, the transfer window brings new stories to our ears every single day. I'm delighted to say a man who's joining us here on World Football Daily to take us through some of those is a man that we always enjoy having on the show. His first appearance of 2014, and we're very glad to welcome him back. Of course, it's the big bad Brass, Mr. Andy Brassel, joining us here on World Football Daily. Andy, man, a pleasure to have you back here in 2014. Hope you had a very good new year and a bit of downtime as well over Christmas, mate. How are you?
I did. That is the way of the European leagues. And a happy new year to you too.
Well, it must be nice that you kind of, especially anybody covering Germany, I always get quite jealous of over Christmas, because they have this month off. Sure, there's friendlies and whatnot, but they do have a very large chunk of downtime before getting back into the hectic schedule again. Whereas anybody who's covering English football is kind of almost at their wit's end over Christmas, because they're trying to do everything with the family, and then they're also having to cover all the football as well. It must be a nightmare for them.
You never know what to say to people. You say have a good holiday a couple of days before Christmas, and they sort of look daggers at you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm getting up at 7 a.m. on Boxing Day. Thank you. Yeah, cheers. Let's talk actually. A quick question about the kind of Christmas break, because everybody, a lot of people say they want to see that coming into English football, having, you know, less fixtures and a little bit more of a rest over the Christmas and New Year period. But considering that we see so many of these clubs going off and playing, you know, big friendlies over in Doha, out in Dubai, kind of raking the money from that, would a Christmas break, sorry, for England, especially for the clubs that are involved in things like Champions League football already, would it actually become a break? Because surely they'd do what teams like PSG, Real Madrid are doing and go off and play each other in these friendly games and have all these training camps out in Asia, kind of to build up the kind of marketability of the clubs, that a break wouldn't really take place.
Well, it's clear that would happen with Premier League clubs, but I think the players getting a few days off, just completely away from everything. But like you know, even in France, which has the shortest winter break, they have a week, and you know that was the same for PSG, even though they went to Doha. I think that's really important, especially in a World Cup year. I think it's not just the physical benefits, but the mental benefits. You know, players being able to spend time with their families at Christmas and just like disconnect and come back mentally refreshed. I think that's very, very important. And I think as well, you know, people talk a lot about tradition and how you couldn't do away with Boxing Day fixtures and stuff. You don't need to do away with Boxing Day fixtures. You know, you look at Belgium and Turkey, they play on the 26th, 27th, 28th, and then they have a couple of weeks off. So, you know, that is a way you could do it. And I think especially in recent years, you're getting more extreme weather conditions in the UK that cause a lot of postponements. And, you know, I think that can be a real difficulty, because, of course, even at Premier League grounds where you have undersoil heating, fantastic pitches, it's more a question of public safety. You know, icy walkways around the stadium, public transport not working properly. You've had a game called off at Arsenal when the pitch is perfect before, for those very sort of reasons. Mm. So I think it would be all round beneficial for everyone, say, if you had 3 weeks off from, you know, call it a couple of days from the end of January. You know, if a tour wants to go in there, you know, I still think it's a case of mental recharging. If you do a mini tour to the Middle East, even though it would probably be better if they just stayed at home and trained with some intensity, because, you know, the matches aren't quite as high octane as they would be if you were playing league fixtures, and, you know, the players get to bond in a camp abroad. I suppose a lot of people would look at the fact that, you know, Premier League clubs do have a sort of checkered record of behaviour on tour. So perhaps that would be something to look at. I think it would be an inevitable part of any winter break, but that doesn't mean it's an idea we should completely write off.
Now, Andy, before we get into the depths of European transfer windows and obviously there's plenty of possible moves coming up and Matic's move back to Chelsea as well, I definitely want to talk to you about. Before we get into that, I've been rambling on already in the show about these ESPN 30 for 30 documentaries that I'm sure many of our listeners are aware of. They're beautiful inside stories into some of the greatest sporting stories throughout history. In football, because there aren't many of them about football, a lot of them are around basketball, baseball, etc. What would be the football story that you would like to see turned into maybe like an hour and a half documentary about the game? What kind of team, what player, what would it be focused around, do you think, Andy?
There are a few that spring to mind. I certainly think looking to Corsican football is something I wrote for the first Blizzard, and I think the Blizzard can provide loads of templates for this sort of thing, because it's, you know, long form stuff that's not really necessarily driven by a news agenda, just stuff that, you know, we think would be interesting and like to talk about. And, you know, loads of people have got on board with that, and it's been brilliant. Jonathan Wilson's done an incredible job with it. So I think Corsica is something that's always been a pet interest of mine, just because of the deeply political undercurrent to the football there, and the incredibly volatile nature of it. But the match that I've always loved more than most since I've been doing the job has been the Sevilla derby between Betis and Sevilla. And I would love to see something on that, because, you know, it's something that people say it's no big deal in the days coming up towards the game. But when you're there on the day and on the night, it's absolutely explosive. And to have a city of that size, about 400,000, with two teams that can get crowds of 50,000 in is absolutely extraordinary. I suppose in one way it'd be like if Newcastle and Sunderland played in the same city.
It's obviously. Actually, Andy, you've got the connections down at BT. You could. You know, they're putting together these BT sports stories and whatnot. I'm sure that would be a viable pitch. I mean, it is a wonderfully unique derby, that, as you say, in terms of the size of the city. I mean, it's not even just like taking Sunderland and Newcastle, putting them in the same city. You'd then have to reduce probably the population of Newcastle by about 30% or so to then get it down to those two teams and the intensity of that rivalry. I think for me personally, I'd go with the AC Milan Barcelona 4-0 European Cup final, and how Milan were such underdogs going into that game and then just tore them apart. I'd love to see and hear about the kind of backstage kind of stories that came out, you know, what Milan thought going into that game against kind of Stoichkov without two of their best defenders. I digress though. We'll get into that a little bit later on the show and see what Rafa says as well. Let's get into some of the transfer stories coming out from the January transfer window at the moment, Andy, and the return of Matic back to Chelsea from Benfica. Is this a smart move from Chelsea? We've seen it a couple of times with Premier League clubs getting rid of somebody and then bringing them back for a vast amount more money. And Matic's obviously part of that deal that helped to bring David Luiz across to Benfica. What do you make? Do you think he's ready now for Premier League football?
I do. He's been tremendous in the last 18 months. Benfica's best player, I think. I was lucky enough to be at the Estadio de Luz for Benfica Porto on Sunday, and it was his last game, of course. And, you know, there'd been talk beforehand that he might not play the game because he was scared of getting an injury if he played. And I tend to think that was agent talk rather than the player himself. He's always been someone who's worked very hard for the team, very committed, and it's very difficult to imagine him refusing to play or anything like that. And he was so committed on the day. He was the best player on the pitch by a mile, and he showed exactly why Chelsea wanted him so much, and so many other clubs wanted him so much. I think Chelsea were prodded into action by the interest of so many others, and so many other direct competitors, I think, on the English and European stage, because you know, Bayern Munich had a little look recently, because he's not just very strong defensively, the great tackler, and really good in the air, but he's someone who can bring the ball forward. He can dribble, he can pass the ball, and you know, I think that's become very, very important in a midfielder with mainly defensive characteristics nowadays, that they can actually do something on the ball. It's a need that Chelsea have had for a while. It's a need that Chelsea have had for a year and a half, which is why people have looked at Matic and specifically their decision to let him go and wondered, did they do the right thing? I tend to think it's a move that actually works out pretty well for everyone, because I think, you know, people can criticise Chelsea's ability to bring players through the ranks, and, you know, I think that's a different issue to this, because there's no one who thought that Matic would go on to become the player that he has become. And I think even in his first year at Benfica, everyone was really sort of thinking, you know, here's a guy who can do a job for the squad. But for the first year and a half, no one saw a player who was going to lead the team forward or anything like that. And it was just really through necessity when they sold Axel Witsel to Zenit St. Petersburg and Javi Garcia, of course, to Manchester City in a couple of days that he had to come in and do a job, and he became a regular really overnight. And he was fantastic. You know, they didn't miss Witsel or Javi Garcia last season, which is, I think, says all you need to know. He's grown an enormous amount. He's incredibly confident. But I think for anyone to foresee that was going to happen, I think it's ridiculous to criticise Chelsea and say, oh, well, why did you let him go? They had no idea. And I think, you know, it's a small price to pay to have had him go out and get that experience of, you know, playing in these big European matches, of playing in a huge rivalry, you know, every time, not just Benfica and Porto play, but every time Benfica play is a big deal. You can't afford to drop a single point. So competitive has been the battle between those two at the top of the league in the last couple of years. He deserved more trophies in his time in Lisbon. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And that they should have been champions last year. They should have been champions the year before. But nevertheless, I think the Benfica fans will have very, very positive memories of him, and he got a terrific hand before the game and when he went off at the end.
It's not a bad way for him to depart with a 2-0 win over Porto in that fantastic game against Benfica in the Estadio de Luz. But for Benfica now, there's got to be, you mentioned already some of the names that have departed from that similar position that Matic now leaves vacant at Benfica. Who comes in to replace in such an important role, in such an important season, with Sporting Lisbon throwing their name in the hat as well in for the title race?
Well, it's a very difficult question, and I think if I had to judge the title race on the evidence of last weekend, you'd think if Porto keep on the road that they are, they've got absolutely no chance of winning the league. But one Portuguese journalist, I'm afraid I can't remember who it is off the top of my head, said best transfer business that might happen for Porto and Sporting in this winter is the departures from Benfica. Everyone knows they're short of money. They've sold Matic for a little bit less than they've preferred to, that they would have sold him last summer, and Jorge Jesus, the coach, said, you know, he's too good, I just can't hold on to him. But they were asking too much for him, and for that reason they didn't get to complete a deal. Now not qualifying for the Champions League, having spent a lot elsewhere in the club on English Premier League rights, they need cash flow, and so Garay will probably follow him out the door. I think you're looking at probably Stephen Vitoria to come up from the B team. He was at Estoril last season to replace a very, very good centre-back. But, you know, not much top-flight football, not any top-flight football, really, this season. In midfield, I think it's more a case of rejigging the balance. Maybe Enzo Perez, who's been brilliant, really, since he's come back to Benfica from that loan spell in Argentina, in a central role rather than as a winger. He's someone who will be relied on even more. It's something he can cope with. Ideally, they'd like to get someone in, but whether they'll actually be able to spend any money this month, I feel sorry for Jorge Jesus. He's done financially brilliantly for the club. It's not just the fact that he won some trophies and played some great football. It's the fact that he's managed to make players augment in value tremendously. I think Fabio Contrao is an example. Matic is another one, of course. So he's done great business, and you know, let's hope he gets a few euros to spend in this window. I'm not convinced he will, though.
There's talk as well of departures from Porto from a similar position to Matic as well. Gonzalez, Fernando have both been linked to moves away from Porto. I mean, those could also be very damaging in those central midfield roles for Porto come the second half of the season, should they lose one or both of them.
My feeling is that won't happen, though. It looks like Fernando might sign a new contract in order to protect his value for Porto. It won't stop him maybe leaving in the summer or whatever, but that seems to be fairly close, according to his agents. Lucho Gonzalez is out of contract at the end of the season, but he said he's not going to even talk about his contract until the end of the season. He wants to concentrate on winning the league and going from there. And I think, you know, with the bond he has with Porto, you can really believe him when he says that. For them, it's not about buying or selling players. They've got a very capable squad. I think it's very unlikely they're going to lose anyone. It's about getting a plan, about getting a best 11. That's what they don't have at the moment. Paulo Fonseca's changed shape, he's changed personnel, and they've looked pretty unconvincing against all really but the weakest opposition. It was the first time in 20 Champions League group campaigns that have not won a single home match, which, you know, they're in a very, very clement group to qualify from, and quite frankly how Zenit St. Petersburg got out of that is absolutely astonishing. So, you know, there's work to do, but there's work to do with the existing players, because I really think they'll hang on to Fonseca, whether he's the right man for the job. Personally, I think probably not, but they're very unlikely to fire him mid-season. So he's got a big challenge over the next 3 or 4 months.
Let's jump across just very briefly, Andy, because I know we're taking up too much of your time already today on the on World Football Daily. But I do want to
talking too long. One of the
well, you know, I didn't want to say never, Andy, never. I do want to talk about Schalke, because in Germany everybody's you know, Dortmund, Bayern, there's been the talk about Lewandowski and then who Dortmund can bring in to replace him to, next season. But Schalke are the ones that are making plenty of headlines, especially around the future of Julian Draxler. Now, the club has said that there have been no bids from Arsenal. But for Draxler to leave, would this be the wrong time, do you think, for the 20-year-old to be departing from Germany, where he has got a very stable system around him that knows how to play to his advantages?
I think it would be a bad time to move, but I think he knows that. He's very intelligent. He's very mature for his age. And he's someone who shows that he will flourish when he moves abroad, as I'm pretty much sure he will, if not at the end of this season, at the end of the one after. Because, you know, he's been able to step up and seize responsibility at a club like Schalke, which you can't emphasise enough. The pressure that's on players there, and you need to be a strong character to deal with it. And he's somebody who has done. I think especially before the arrival of Kevin Prince-Boateng, an incredible amount of responsibility was falling onto him, and he dealt with it. He got them in the Champions League almost single-handedly when they played terribly over two legs against PAOK. So I think, you know, it's his sort of season of consecration at Schalke, really, and he wants to see that out. Of course, he's been carrying a little injury as well, although he will be ready for the restart on the 24th. I think all parties know it makes better sense for him to stay. Unless he's forced out the door, he will do. But I can foresee a move after that, because, you know, he's someone who deserves to be playing in the best competitions and for trophies all the time.
And the other potential move into the Bundesliga, the return of Kevin De Bruyne, potentially moving to Wolfsburg, leaving Chelsea. This is a really sad story for somebody who's been a wonderful player, finally given an opportunity at Chelsea after being recalled back from his loan spell, and they seem to be shipping him out straight away. Is it De Bruyne who's not good enough, or is it just Chelsea not knowing how to handle and to play this player correctly? Because he's succeeded so far throughout his career when he's not been in the blue of Chelsea.
Exactly, Ollie. I'd go with the latter. I think they really missed the trick here. Obviously, they're getting a great opportunity to make a lot of money out of him, and that goes to offsetting any loss, as you might call it, on Matic. But I don't think that's really the point. I mean, you know, we've been talking all season about how Chelsea have had problems with their strikers. I think they've missed the trick in not using either De Bruyne or Eden Hazard in that role, because they've both played a sort of centre forward or sort of false nine position. Hazard with Lille when he scored an absolute truckload of goals, De Bruyne when he was at Werder Bremen. So, you know, I think maybe they could have been a little bit more adventurous with that. And I think really that's a sort of De Bruyne's situation with Chelsea in microcosm. They haven't dared to give him more of a go. Of course, we know they've got enormous talent there, but it must have really deflated him when he saw them sign Willian, who again has been excellent in recent weeks. You know, there's no criticising him, but it's a great shame for De Bruyne. But I'm sure he'll flourish at Wolfsburg. I think it's an extraordinary amount of money. That, don't get me wrong, it's very, very expensive, but, you know, of all clubs, Wolfsburg can take the hit. And it'd be really interesting to see how they use him, whether they use him in the 10. I tend to think he's better in a central role, even though he cut his teeth in Belgium as a winger. So maybe eventually we're looking at some sort of replacement for Diego. Max Arnold, I think, teenager, will probably continue to flourish in a wide position. But there are a few question marks there at Wolfsburg, because we don't know if Ivica Olic will extend his deal as well, which is going to be out at the end of the season. I'm sure Diego will be on his way, and Atletico Madrid, a return there wouldn't surprise me. De Bruyne's going to get games, and that's really, really important, because he's someone who deserves to be in the mix for the 11 for Belgium when they start that World Cup campaign.
If he did move, I mean, that midfield, Ivan Perisic, Diego, and of course De Bruyne, if he joined them, would that boost them into potentially being, we've seen Dortmund slide recently and they're only 2 points off those Champions League spots, would that tip them into a very strong possibility of being in the Champions League for next year, Wolfsburg?
I think that's exactly what they're trying to do, Ollie. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They've stabilised nicely under Dieter Hecking. I think they've been pretty strong at grinding out results over the last couple of months. I'm never completely convinced by them. But, you know, they're starting to at last, you know, be able to grind out results and not be so porous, which has been their problem ever since they won the title, getting the lid back on that. Defensively, they've been very unstable. They've got some important players in there now who are steady, who can lead them forward. They always had a great goalkeeper in Diego Benaglio, but now I think they've got a great centre-back in Robin Knocker as well. You know, there are quality players wherever you look all over the pitch, and they're looking to improve, I think. The fourth spot is definitely up for grabs. I can see Dortmund getting back up into second place. They've got players coming back. Of course, we've still got more to see from Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Who knows, maybe he'll evolve in a central position in time, having been used on the wings. You know, there's been talk of him maybe being an eventual Lewandowski replacement, although I'd be surprised if they didn't buy a centre-forward in summer. But I think fourth and maybe third, depending on how Bayer Leverkusen get on, because of course they had a couple of dodgy results before we went into the break. If they can recover and get back on track, I don't think that many people will be surprised. But you know, it's a sort of watershed for them, because Sydney Sam has already signed for Schalke next season. You know, you have to wonder where they're going to go from there. Mönchengladbach would still be my favourites for fourth. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They're just so good to watch coming forward, and I think, you know, they've coped with some horrible injuries in defence, and they've got over that. So I think they've got past the most difficult point they'll have this season. But Wolfsburg are really up for challenging them, and of course that draw between the pair just before Christmas just keeps it bubbling nicely. So if that was still a storyline become middle of April, I think that would be very exciting indeed.
And I think it also makes the opening game back from the break for the Bundesliga of Gladbach at home against Bayern Munich even more tantalising as well, with Gladbach, as I say, jumping up into third place in the Bundesliga table above Dortmund before that break. Andy, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure as always to have a chat with you about all things European football, and we will get back in touch with you, I'm sure, in the next few weeks to get you back on World Football Daily and providing us with your just overwhelming knowledge on all things football, mate. We always appreciate you taking the time out.
Sorry for celebrating my return from a sore throat so emphatically. speaking to you soon.
It's not a problem, mate. Always a pleasure, never a chore, as Christian Hennage would say, mate. Thanks so much, and we'll catch up with you very soon indeed, man.
Cheers.
Take care. Andy Brassel there joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through some of the transfer stories out of Portugal and the Bundesliga today. The Bundesliga, of course, still off on its break, returns on the 24th of January. Those lazy, lazy Germans not getting back to football just yet. But a very interesting idea of Kevin De Bruyne moving back to Wolfsburg. It's been a shame, because there's so much talk about his potential. Of course, he had great periods at Werder Bremen. And of course,